Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're here on episode 34, recording on a Thursday evening, and it's the beginning of September. We're down the stretch here with about 5.5 weeks to go. I think 5-6 weeks to go in the season. And joining me today, a very special, special, special guest, somebody who I think you all know is one of the most well-respected podcasters and high-stakes players in all of fantasy baseball. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Toby, better known as Bat Flip Crazy. What's going on, Toby?
Hey, Vlad. Thanks so much for having me. I got the triple special, title, which I really appreciate. You know, the special, special guest. So
Yes. Yeah. Because we have a lot of special guests, but no one, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like Rob Silver, he's like a special guest, but you're like, you know, special, special. So
I want to be at least 4 or 5 times more special than Rob Silver. You know, that's like goal in life, you know?
That's mine too. Always is. Yeah. And of course, because, you know, West Coast brethren, and it's nice also that our schedules line up for something like this. Kids are asleep and we can just concentrate and talk about baseball for a bit.
Yeah, that's actually really nice. Like, you know, anything before 8 p.m. is always tough for me on the West Coast. So for East Coasters, that's a little challenging to accommodate. So definitely appreciate the West Coast being the best coast for
Indeed.
Podcasts.
That's how I feel for sure. So you and I met in First Pitch Arizona, believe it was 2019. Was that your second year playing NFBC?
I think so. Yes, because it would have been the fall of 2019. So 2019 was my first full season playing the NFBC. I had friends who had played it before, and I'd kind of helped them out a little bit, but it was my first kind of foray because I moved to California. I was in Washington State before that, so I couldn't actually play in Washington State.
Yeah, and so at that point when we had met you, you were kind of already on the radars of a lot of people in fantasy because you had the podcast going on, and then we knew that you were somewhat new to NFBC, but you're just one of those folks that took to it very quickly, just kind of figured things out. I think most people know who are familiar with you know about the the pocket aces strategy that you had used that season that was very successful for you, and a phrase that meant that I think you essentially coined, and people just sort of ran with it, or maybe you were doing it but then other people coined it and then just kind of became the Toby, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was doing it, and then I'm like a horrible person when it comes to like branding or like marketing or something like that. So I think it was Ryan Bloomfield posted, I did the pocket aces and I posted my draft board, and Ryan Bloomfield posted a picture of pocket aces, and me being like, not super intelligent, I was like, oh my gosh, double aces. And then somebody else came back and was like, no, like pocket aces. And it was like, oh, that's it. That's it. That's one that people remember. So it's like Ryan Bloomfield visually, I think, coined the term, and then somebody else, did it otherwise. So, yeah.
And it's interesting. And it's interesting how the whole thing with pitching has evolved over the years, because traditionally in fantasy, and still a lot of people to this day that don't play NFBC, they're usually waiting on pitchers, right? I mean, it's usually back in the days, 10, 15 years ago, you get those big boy Albert Pujols's, Miggy Cabrera's. These are the targets in the first round, and pitching was usually an afterthought. And sometimes you can get away with winning your, local Yahoo League with your first pitcher not till the 8th or 9th round. And obviously NFBC kind of changed that around a lot because of the overall component about having strength in all your categories. And we started, just kind of seeing pitchers crack into the first 2 rounds. And then it really kind of turned, I think, a little bit before 2019, where you started seeing more people taking pitchers early on. And then, of course, last season, Phil Dussault winning the NFBC main event overall, he did so with Jacob deGrom as his first round pick, a guy he didn't even have for half a season. So, and then the other thing is, a lot of times people take these strategies to the extreme and don't really recognize that these things change from year to year, right? I mean, I guess the players, the players that we're talking about here, they change from time to time, but like even yourself, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, you did end up going heavy pitching, but you did do a lot of drafts, I think DCs, where you did go and switch it up with some hitters early on.
Yeah. You know, I definitely haven't gone, this year I was actually, this year I was a little bit more pitching heavy than usual. I think it was like 2019 where Pocket Aces first started. And then I started taking some hitters in the second round, you know, a little bit, mixing it up. I think that's one of the things that I struggle with a little bit is I'm pretty rigid, you know, like in terms of like my drafting strategy and stuff like that. And sometimes I don't focus as much on the quote unquote value of a pick or like who's the best spot here. I'm much more like, I'm going to take two pitchers here because that's what I feel comfortable with. So I think I've played around with it and gone to different ends of the spectrum, never leaving my first round pitcher really. Although my super, which is doing really well, I have Shohei as my first round pick from this year. So maybe that's a little like, you know, Toby be a little bit more flexible and kind of shake things up a little bit. So so we'll see. But I definitely think that the pitching heavy approach, like one thing you'll see with my leagues this year is just like, I'm pretty consistently high up there in all of my leagues. I'm not in first in a lot of them. And so I think like going really strong with pitching is a good way to make sure you have a competitive team, but sometimes it caps you out a little bit without not taking as much risk or as balanced of approach. It can sometimes limit your ceiling in some instances, I think.
And so today we wanted to talk a little bit about, we want to touch on some of the prospects that are being called up, the real stud guys on the hitting front, and then look a little bit ahead into 2023 ADP. Some may think it's premature, but it's always something that's fun to do. But before we do that, I wanted to just kind of go over your teams and discuss how they're doing, some of the players involved and the draft strategies, lessons from it. Correct me if I'm wrong. So you're in two main events. You're in the Super, which is a high stakes standalone. And then you've got a bunch of DCs. Am I missing any other big teams of yours?
Yeah, I am in. I'm in the Diamond Auction. I share a team with Slack, with Brian Slack, and then I'm also in the. I have an OC, you know, but outside of that, it's like it's all DCs and the two mains, the two high stake leagues, and then the OC are my big pay leagues, I guess you would say.
And so with the main events, you've got both of them. It's a contest with, I believe it's, how many is it? 650 or so overall.
And that sounds about right. I think they might be at 700 at this point. Let's see. Mm-hmm. What do we got? I'll check it out. With the overall standings, I feel like they increased it a little bit. So maybe it's probably going to be out of
665. I was thinking something like that. Maybe I'm off.
Let's see. 705.
705.
Right in between
okay.
What we were both thinking. Yeah.
And so you, both of your squads, they're hovering around 100 overall, which is pretty solid. And you got both are in second place. They're basically like around 110 points, which is really good in some cases. In some league main events, you'd be winning there. But in one of your leagues, the league leader is 10th overall, and he's got a whopping 133 points. So that's kind of a tough one to overcome. You're working to hold off third and fourth. They're about 10 points behind you. And then in your live main event, the one that we basically were in the same room for in Vegas, the guy that you're covering for today, actually on the podcast, my partner, Matthew Davis, he's in first place. And you were telling me before the show that he just kind of shot up there over the last couple months, but that you're right now hovering around 102, 105 points, and you're trying to hold off the latest Hall of Famer, one of the best players around, John Posma. So that's got to be fun with him on your tail. But either way, in these two main events, like just, you know, phenomenal work. And it really is a big deal to be doing well, you know, so well in those leagues. I feel like sometimes players, I feel like you might be the same where we don't necessarily expect to win every league, but when you're in second place and you know that, you know, that you're good at that, it's like a little frustrating, right? Like you want to be there at the top and at least winning something.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like finishing second out of 15 teams is hard. Like these leagues are really hard and the competition level is incredibly high. But at the same time, I'm somebody who generally focuses on like what I'm not what I'm not doing well, but like I'm good at analyzing where I've made mistakes, you know, or like where I've, you know, where, how I would change things, or like different things that I would have done, like bad bids that I made in Fab, things like that. So I'm always kind of looking at things like that, or kind of wondering like what could have been if I had drafted better. But yeah, I mean, like I was battling it out with, I was telling you before, like I was battling it out with John Posma. Like we were both at 113, 114 for a bit. And then Maddie just came out of, not out of nowhere. Like I saw him creeping up. I looked at his team. I looked at where he was in the standings. And I said, I'm capped out pretty good at where I'm at. Like I've been stuck at 113, 114 for a reason. Whereas for him, like he really had a lot of points for, to grow into. And that's the team for him that has like zero steals. Like if he was higher up in the steals, he'd be way up there in the overall as well. So kudos to him, a great team. I don't think I'm going to catch him. I don't think I have much anywhere to go. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, some team like either John's or some team behind us who kind of gets hot down the stretch kind of comes in, because we've both kind of been, and again, I haven't looked at his team super closely, but like we've both kind of been hovering around each other for quite a long time at this point.
Yeah. And I was telling you before the show how also it's a little frustrating when things start to fall apart a little bit in the final month. And especially in my case, in my best main event, where I don't have a lot of fab to spend. I do not have the hammer in any way, shape or form. These stud hitters that are coming up, I essentially have no shot at them. Granted, most of the other teams in my league are under $50 as well. And so someone's going to get them for cheap, unless somebody that hasn't been spending in a while just comes out of nowhere. And you see that once in a while, but it's frustrating because this team has basically been in second place all season. It was in first, maybe in April, and always within striking distance of first place. So, you know, 10, 15 points behind goes down to 5 points, then drops, you know, to 10. And it's been there. I love the core, love the squad. Basically, I need a lot of Houston Astro magic over the last couple of months, which is frustrating because Jordan Alvarez is hurting, but it's him, Bregman, and Altuve. I have those three guys. Got Birdie and Bubba Thompson for steals. Pitching is nice. So things are there, but now I've got Ryan Roof. You know, folks know him from RotoWire, the closers guy. And now he's caught up. He had been 10 points behind me for so long. All of a sudden he just passed me. So now I'm thinking about the second place that I wasn't happy about. And now I might be, you know, looking at third, and then you never know, then other teams come from behind. So it's crazy, man. And we still have so much of the season to go.
Yeah. I mean, we've still got the 5 weeks, and a lot can change in that period of time. And I think one thing that'll be interesting to take place, and you don't like to think about it, but you think about it, is that football's starting, right? And so there's going to be, I think, a lot of people who maybe they're in eighth or ninth and they don't see that path forward. They start paying a little bit less attention. I mean, like that's my hope at least, because in a lot of places, like my counting categories is where I can improve, you know, like gaining in those runs, gaining in those RBIs, gaining in those home runs, you know, in particular. And so, you know, that's what you kind of hope you can do, is kind of grind it out. Or you have a lot of situations where maybe playing time is changing. They're giving one guy, you know, a lot more run than previously. And if you're not paying a lot of attention, you don't realize that this player that normally plays every day is now playing 4 out of 7, you know, and this guy who wasn't playing before is now playing, you know, 7 out of 7 or 6 out of 7. And so those, I think, are some of the advantages that develop over the course of the end of the season that you hope you can take advantage of, but it's hard to rely on that, you know?
And so with your live main event, we'll look at this one first. You've been kind of hit a little hard with the injury bug. You lost a closer in Raisel Iglesias being traded, unfortunately. I'm guessing probably your third round pick in that one.
He was actually my second round pick. It was when Wheeler was hurt.
Yeah.
So I went Cole, I think, at number 2, and then I got Iglesias in the second round, and then I took Wheeler in the third.
Yep. So the pitcher. And pitching is a big strength for you on this team. Obviously, you added looks like you were all in on Dylan Cease and being able to grab him where you can. So that was a phenomenal call. You got Buxton on this team, which also I'm sure was a pretty penny, probably your fourth round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fourth round pick. Yeah, I got a lot of I got lucky-ish on that one in the sense of, like, I think that was Buxton's the latest he went in any main, and everybody like at the draft was like, I cannot believe you got Buxton. And I couldn't believe that I got him either. But, you know, the home runs have been great, but, you know, the batting average has been a drain. He hasn't really been stealing much. I needed the power, so I'm definitely not complaining, but, you know, it hasn't worked out. Like, of all the seasons, right, you're like, all he needs to do is be healthy, and you get Buxton. And we've gotten a little bit of Buxton, but we haven't really gotten the full thing, even though he's been healthier than any previous season before.
And so you picking second, meaning he fell to you at like 58 or 62, which is pretty amazing considering he was going in the high teens. He was going in the early second round in some drafts. So that's just unbelievable. So that landed for you and leading your team in home runs there. I think 28 homers he's hit.
Oh, yeah. Lineup. Nobody else on my team hits homers. I mean, it's like Edmund, Hayes, even Bell this year, like hasn't really gone deep that much. Turner, Benintendi, Segura, you know, a lot of, yeah, the power just hasn't really come through with that group as I had hoped.
Segura, did you hold him while he was out or did you drop no, pick him up late?
Yeah, I dropped him for a couple months and then picked him up, I think like a week and a half before he came back. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's when one place that I've been successful. And I think that's something for sure is just, if you can get those guys, if you can have the foresight, and the patience, it's difficult to be like, I got to start this guy who's only got 5 games next week. I can do that, or I can pick up Segura early. But man, getting those guys that are not elite talents, but are very good players, like a couple weeks before they come back, instead of bidding on them when we know the day they're coming back or when we know the rehab assignment has started, really saves a lot of times. I had I picked up Joey Votto in a couple places last year in a similar situation, which has really huge. Been a boon in Fab. Yeah. And Segura has been, you know, he's been really strong since he's come back. He's been, I missed on this team where I needed speed, you know, and batting average. I really missed having him injured during the course of the season. But, you know, I haven't been like, I mean, everybody's getting that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was in the same boat in terms of grabbing him a little early. And this was a time where we thought Ozzie Albies and him might be coming back at a similar time. And then the reports were clear that Braves are going to be a little bit more cautious with him. But yeah, that was the play to grab Segura for, you know, under $15, under $10, you know, a couple of weeks in advance. So, and he's been pretty solid. In fact, had he not got injured, man, I mean, what was his ADP? Like 160, 190. He would have smashed, just absolutely smashed. He'd probably be up there among the top 50 players.
Oh, for sure. He was crushing. I mean, you know, the previous seasons, I don't even know if he broke double digits for steals or he was low double digits. His projections, I think, were 14 homers and 12 steals or 14 and 11. He already had 8 steals before his first injury. So not even 2 months into the season, you know, just really crushing it. High batting average, hitting for a little bit of pop. So it was that one was definitely a bummer, but it's just one of those things, right? Where you're paying attention, you see the guy gets injured and, you know, you can't really woe is me. Like, it's going to happen to pretty much every squad. If it doesn't, like, you know, over every 10 years, maybe you're going to get a few teams that just get super lucky and don't get injured. And you hope that's the season where you made the good picks and it all kind of fits together and you're up in one of those top spots in the overall. But in this particular, you know, case, it just didn't happen for him, which was fine. You know, it happens. I had him a few places.
And then I realized, so obviously your pitching is phenomenal. I feel like it is every year, but Eric Lauer was a fantastic pick. He was going around the 20th round at that time. Miles Mikolas, somebody who I really wasn't in. I just didn't see the high strikeout upside. I didn't like him the same way I did when he first came into the league from, you know, he was in Japan or Korea. I forget, but
I think he was Japan, but I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, so there's a little period of time where I liked him, and then I was just kind of done with him. But what I just recognize is that, you know, obviously Brian Slack, who I think is one of the best players around, you guys share a platinum auction team, and he also has some Mikolas because I was reviewing his team when we did a podcast. So did one of you guys sell the other on him, or were you both kind of like, yes, we both like him, he's a great price?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were both interested in him, you know. I mean, Brian's a super sharp player. So Mikolas is one of the things that I always think about is like, you think about your team and you think about your picks and you think about the things that go well and you think about the things that go wrong and you're like, man, am I going to be able to replicate this? Like, I have Mikolas on 14 of 17 teams.
Wow.
In the NFBC. Like, I loved Mikolas because, you know, he was injured, but he isn't a strikeout guy, but he's high volume because he's efficient. He doesn't walk guys. The Cardinals have the best defense in all of baseball. They've got the best division in all of baseball to be in as well. And so I really saw him like before the season. I don't know if I said it on pod or where I was saying it, but I was like, he's going to have the Adam Wainwright season from last year, you know, wow. Where it's like Wainwright, like wasn't special. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, like you look at the skills, there was nothing special there, but you know, like he lets guys put the ball in play. They don't put it into play too hard, you know? And he's got such a great defense there, you know? And so, yeah. And it's been fortunate too, because like Mikolas, if you look at his overall metrics, you know, the most annoying thing is when you have guys that do really well against good teams and do really poorly against bad teams. And I think generally Mikolas, with the exception of maybe this week against the Reds, which it was at Cincinnati, and I think I maybe should, it's a two-step, so I was going to go with him anyways, but you know, his blowups have been against good teams, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like he got shelled against Colorado, and he only had one start that week, or maybe actually I think he had two starts that week, but I wasn't putting him in there. And so I've been able to avoid like some of the blowups. So even within the context of my team, he's doing much better than he is overall through the course of the season, which is nice. Whereas like a guy like Marco Gonzalez, who was my second most highly rostered pitcher, you know, he seems to do really well against good teams and mm-hmm. really crappy against bad teams. Like the Rangers just destroy him. And so, and the Rangers aren't bad, but at the beginning of the season, you thought they were, you know? So
yeah.
Just one of those things that happens over the course of the fantasy season, you just hope it kind of plays out in your favor.
And just an example of that, on that team, the live main event. So you really do know Miles Mikolas well, because he's got a 2.92 ERA in your starting lineup and a 3.48 ERA in real life. So you're really able to avoid those pretty nicely.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like one of the tools that I use is Razzball's weekly player rater. Mm-hmm. Now, I definitely take a look at that. For pitching, it's a little different. You know, I think it's more of a kind of like a feel, you know, who's the opposing pitcher, what's the team, what's the venue. The one thing that I've really taken from there is how much better pitchers generally do at home versus on the road. And so yep. you kind of try to factor, you know, those pieces into the equation. But there's plenty of guys where it's like, God, Mitch Keller, you know, I had him early on because I'm a big believer in spring training velocity, you know, so I'll go after a lot of guys who have that increase in velocity. It's worked for me in the past in some situations, but this year with Mitch Keller, I was like, okay, I'll be in. And I like kept him in there, and it was like tantalizingly close. And then I look back and it's like, he has like a 7 ERA on my team and like a 1.7 whip, you know? And it's mm-hmm. like, I missed every stretch where he put together a quality outing. So over the course of the full season, hopefully it kind of evens itself out. So it's more about skill and the pitchers that you've been able to roster than it is about whether you pick the right matchups or not.
And then on that second main team, this was one that you did online, a similar start with the pitchers, Brandon Woodruff. So I assume that you had a back end first round pick, and with Josh Hader, who's never available at 45. So sounds like that was the kind of at the turn, right? You took those two guys at the turn.
Yeah, it was, I think I had the 10th or 11th pick mm-hmm. in that draft. And so that one was a struggle, 12th. And I was really struggling with that pick because Scherzer was just, there was like some, mm-hmm. or some rumblings that he had, I think he had a hamstring injury yep. or something like that at that point where he was going to miss like the first week of the season. And so like, you know, and I'm a pitcher heavy guy. So it's like, you knew Burns was going to go, you knew Cole was going to go, and Woodruff was kind of SP3 in that situation a lot of the times. And so I was really hoping that he was going to fall to me and not kind of force my hand. But I think that's kind of like something where I feel like I need to have a little bit of a different approach moving forward, where I need to be more open to kind of taking the best player available, you know, whether or not I'll actually end up doing that, you know, mm-hmm. who knows. But yeah, in this situation, you know, I went Woodruff, Hader, Cease, and then JTR, which is, you know, that's like a dream start right there in a lot of ways. Yeah. Remarkably, I mean, Woodruff has been solid, you know, not spectacular. Like a great example is today where it's just like, he just can't quite get over the hump. You know, like I think it was 7 of the 8 hits he gave up were with 2 outs today. So he gave up 5 earned runs, you know, 5 earned runs on 8 hits and walks over like 6 innings, you know? So, mm-hmm. so it's just one of those situations. And yeah, I think across all my teams, it's a pretty standard thing. It's like my pitching is doing really, really well, even though I've struggled mightily with closers. Like I've really just sucked at identifying closers and having them, you know, kind of hold the job or even get the job. But despite that, my pitching is really strong. And then it's just been a matter of trying to piecemeal that, the hitting together. And I've just like been really bad. Like I look at teams and I'm like, oh my God, like if I just had, if I got any of these hitters right, you know, like, even, I mean, on this team, like JTR is a hit for sure, but like Tyler O'Neill, bah. Jonathan yep. India, bah. Contreras, good. Rosario, fine. But like Hayes, like you don't realize how bad Hayes has been because it's like, but he's got like, I don't know, 4 or 5 home runs. He's got like 13 steals, which is great. His batting average isn't even that great. His runs in RBI are terrible.
I have a lot of Hayes. I know.
I have a lot of Hayes. Then it's like Pham has been great, but then it's like Soler, bam, you know, mm-hmm. App has been good. Mancini's been good. Pena's been all right. Laureano's been all right. So there's definitely some hits in there, but it's like if some of those earlier round guys had been able to hit, feel like I'd be in a different position. And so it's always like, when I think about next year, it's like at this point in the season, I'm like, man, I need to take that second round hitter, you know, mm-hmm. or I need to take that first round hitter, or I need to take that second closer, you know, earlier. And then I get into the drafts and I operate from such a mindset of like, you know, just absolute and utter fear, where I'm just like looking at my team and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have that spot filled. Uh-huh. There's nobody worth anything there. I need to get this guy. I need to get this guy, you know, and it doesn't work out. And I got lucky in a lot of ways. I was a huge Avisail Garcia fan. I have him a lot of places, and particularly around the time of the major drafts. And he just would not fall to me. You know, I think I ended mm-hmm. up picking him in like the 130s at one point just to have him on one of my teams. And he's been terrible too. So I kind of, you know, you get lucky in some instances where even guys that you really liked, maybe you don't get, and it ends up being beneficial to you in the long term.
Oh no, I ended up getting my Cody Bellingers. That happened.
So yeah.
I did not get pop on.
I mean, the one thing about Cody, yeah, yeah. I mean, like the steals are there and the homers aren't bad, right? Especially in the context of the league. And the batting averages are not as much of a drain as they used to be. You know, like that 215, 220 guy, you know, when the league's hitting an average of like 240. You know, it's not.
Is he even hitting that though? I don't even know. I haven't even looked at him in so long.
I have him in an OBP league where his OBP is like 260 something.
Wow.
So he could be pretty low. Let's take a look at our buddy Cody. 17 home runs, 11 steals, 59, 54, 204 batting average.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I knew it was bad. So yeah, he's definitely going to be really, I don't even know what the Dodgers are going to do with him, but obviously, you know, it's pretty clear and I have no problem taking my L's. And even if his draft value, like by the time we got to main events and he was going around the 10th round, like ADP of 150, I mean, he's actually like a borderline top 100 player. So technically, if you're looking across the board, kind of, you know, out earn that draft spot, but it sure doesn't feel like it. It's me taking an L there, I think for sure. One thing I wanted to mention was the catchers, because you got two of the top three catchers in the game, Real Muto and Wilson Contreras. And it's funny because, you know, sort of you and I razz each other every draft season about catchers, how I'm always, you know, we have different approaches to it. You like locking those guys in early and getting the studs. I like waiting. And yet, you know, there is no right or wrong answer there, right? If you get the right guys, it's going to work out no matter what. And you have, actually, not only in your online main, but in your online super that you're crushing, you have the Real Muto Wilson Contreras combo in both teams. So it works.
Those catchers that have steals, because I'm go pitcher heavy early on, that really helps me get steals in positions where other guys are taking zeros on those generally, you know? And so in the leagues that are doing the best in a lot of ways, like I have two really good catchers in those instances. And, you know, the risk that you always take is like Danny Jansen was my fallbacks, kind of like my catcher after ADP of 300 that I was taking. And he had like a pretty good run for a few weeks. He had like 9 home runs and 100 plate appearances or something like that. And I kind of kept him in there even when he was injured, just to stick with him. I can't get anybody better on the wire, whatever. And like, it's middle of August and I look at him, he's got like 19 runs. You know, I'm getting 19 runs from a guy that I've had in my team the whole year. Mm-hmm. And just the huge, like the detriment that is. And you compare that to like, you know, a Real Muto, you know, where Real Muto is like, you know, just, you know, what does he have? Like 16 steals and 14 homers, something like that. Like, it's just, yeah, it's huge. And his runs too, like he's just scoring a ton of runs. And that's just a huge, when it works out, it works really well.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little bounce back there for your boy, Real Muto, after the previous season. But yeah, he kind of flipped. He last season in 2021, more home runs than steals, which is, you know, pretty normal. I don't know. A lot of people may not have projected him for, you know, 15 plus steals. And I think most people actually didn't, but he's at 17 actually, yeah, with, you know, a month of the season to go. That'll be very interesting. And he's going to be a pretty penny next year. I think, again, even in his age 32 season, he's going to be one of the top three catchers taken, if not the top catcher. And, yeah, just a phenomenal season. And you're, yeah, super, by the way, man, that's just a beast of a team. You say you got Otani. How much do you love Paul Goldschmidt, and how did you back into that pick because he's nice, safe, and solid, or did you see something that you loved? What's the Goldie story for you?
Yeah, the Goldie story, like, tale as old as time. It's like the difference between a standalone and an overall. You know, in the overall, I'm so focused on steals at that point, or I'm taking another pitcher. You know, that Goldie in first base, it's so deep, it doesn't feel necessary. But I loved Goldie. I mean, like, me and Bubba were doing our usual like position preview on him in the preseason. I was just looking at him. I was like, you know, we thought this guy was washed, and he literally has one like very good season, and every other season is just unbelievable, you mm-hmm. know? And so he had everything going for him, and I really liked him as a player. I have him in, I think, one other league, but it's just first base was deep, right? It's like, do you take Goldie at pick, you know, 45 or pick 50, or do you take Josh Bell at pick, you know, 130, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, that's always what you're the kind of the challenge you're working for. It was the same with Pete Alonso. I loved Pete Alonso in our auction, like, you know, I'm keep on kicking myself because in our discussions before him, we were like, we love Pete Alonso. Like, let's try to get Pete Alonso. Like, if he's there, like at, you know, at cost is like one of our bigger guys. And, you know, I think his AAV was like, you know, like, I think it was like 23 or 24. And I think we went up to 25 on him or something like that. And projection said he was about like a 25, 26 player guy. It's like, I liked him a lot, but it's just you need to get speed. You need to get saves. Like, there's always that kind of pressure that you feel early on in that draft. And I think that's one thing where every year at this time, I'm like, go for the guys that you think are going to be really good and not just the guys that get you steals. Yeah. You know, the guys that are going to fill the other categories and then, you know, just hope that you get lucky on something. And that's a lot of times I feel like what we're trying to do. And the reason why I go back to pitching over and over is I look at my pitching now and I'm like, all I need is really good hitting. And then I look at my hitters and I'm like, you missed on so many hitters. Imagine if you just hit on that
yep.
one guy. Like in 2019, I finished, talking about peaking early. My best finish in overall was ninth. And it was that year. It was not 2019. So my first full year being in the main, and I had Anthony Rendon. And I feel like that's the only difference between kind of this year where I have really good pitching across the board. And that year was, you know, an additional closer, right? Where I think I got Liam Hendricks in that league when he got, when Trinan got yep. injured or left mm-hmm. or whatever it was. And then, and then I got Rendon, who was like a fifth round pick who got brought first round value. You know, those are the types of guys that kind of like can really bring your offense up as like a whole, you know, because, and you can probably feel it with Alex Bregman right now, like, all you really need is that one guy who's just crushing it, you know, and that can really lift a team. Everybody else is just playing where they're usually at, and he's just going crazy. He's hitting four home runs that week, you know, instead of getting your like 12 home runs, you now have 15, you know, or whatever it is, right? So it's those small margins and even those larger margins, and you're just looking for one of those guys to outperform. And I haven't had that like all year. It's just, I have not been able to have that guy who steps out and my picks have been bad, you know, like Justin Turner's a great example. Like he's got what, like 8 home runs. He's hitting 270, which is great, which is one of the reasons why I got him. But he's also got like, you know, maybe double digit home runs.
I mean, you're telling the story of Aaron Judge basically, because, you know, in my rankings, in my VDP, I had him a round ahead. In my DC season, I was drafting Aaron Judge. OCs, my best OC team, that, you know, top 20 overall out of whatever, a couple thousand teams, Aaron Judge is on that team. He is just lapping the field in stats. But in for whatever reason, during that 2-week period where there was concern about him not being vaccinated, not being able to go in Toronto, I let that seep in my head a little too much. And for the most important drafts where I was actually ahead of him on in my rankings, I didn't get any. So no main events, no big teams. Do I have Aaron Judge? And that's such a difference maker. You're going to see all the teams near the top of the overall, the league winners. He really is that much of a difference maker. And then on your point about first baseman and Paul Goldschmidt, you may remember me on Twitter pre-season fighting to the death with people about Jose Abreu and how much people were undervaluing him, because it's like, man, this guy, okay, so he's getting older. So he hit 265 for 1 year. When he hits 300 every year, he's in the middle of like the best lineup. I mean, he's going to be absolutely fine. And so granted, it's an okay season. I looked at him up. I looked him up on the Razzball Player Rater. He's like 67th. So he's earning profit, $20 guy, which is solid, but I didn't land on him on a lot of drafts because either I had like a Freddie Freeman early or would grab like Hoskins or somebody late. Like it just, he was never part of the draft plan because, and then also a lot of it has to do with the roster construction. So where you're going early pitching, usually I will still grab a pitcher in my first first four rounds, but my number three pitcher, I was shopping in that range. It was the Darvishes, the guys that were going around pick 90, where I wasn't even looking at Abreu at that point, either had a first baseman or just, hey, I'll wait on it.
Yeah, totally. And that's what happens, right? Is we kind of have our, and it's not like a bad, it's just what happens. Like we have our different pockets of the draft where we see our value or we want to target guys there. And that's what ends up happening. So for me, it was, you're going pitcher early, so Goldschmidt isn't an option, right? Because you need the steals. And then for you, you're going offense heavy early. And then there's that pocket, like you mentioned, between 70 and 90, you know? And it's like, did you get Eovaldi, you know, McClanahan, Charlie Morton, mm-hmm. you know, all of those guys, you know, who are Manoa, like all those guys were going in that window there. And so, it's just something that happens. Like, I don't think there's any way to avoid it necessarily. And it always looks that way when you look back in reverse and you're like, ah, well, I could have taken that guy or I could have mm-hmm. taken this approach. But I think like whenever I look at my draft boards, I'm always just like, oh my God, like what were you thinking? You know? But at the time, the level of conviction you have that you are right is mm-hmm. so high, you know?
Oh yeah, of course. In the draft season, like I can't be stopped, you know?
Yeah.
But for example, I really had to have Jordan Alvarez everywhere, but he started to get expensive. So I wouldn't be able to get him in the third anymore. He was going in the second. And then you didn't really expect Judge to steal many bases. So at a certain point, if you already have Jordan, you're not really going for Judge and you don't want to put yourself too much of a hole in stolen bases. But it's funny how that works. And usually average is something that I never have to worry about. This has been my biggest weakness this season. That's actually the category that I'm getting the most smashed in.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges too, is just like the ever-changing nature of the ball, you know, like mm-hmm. the ball, like, I mean, the offensive environment is so much lower now than it has been previously. And so hopefully there's some consistency from year to year, but you know, like when you look at my approaches, oftentimes to get those, you know, like 15 to 20, you know, home run guys, like a bunch of those guys, and they all, you know, and they don't have enough power to hit like Judge, you know, like they don't have Judge power, right? They don't have Goldie power. They don't have Alonzo power. And it feels like those are some of the guys that are getting hurt the most. Your Benintendis, you know, like these guys who just have like that barely getting it over the fence power, and it's not playing, you know, it's not playing this year at all. So, and I don't know if that's like a consistent thing across the board or just an excuse I'm making, but yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think a good example of that, for example, was Whit Merrifield when I had just happened to look and already wasn't really much of a fan where he was going, was expecting the stolen bases to regress a little bit, just kind of getting older there and no power. And then I kind of dug into his stat cast and look, and he's literally at the bottom of exit velocity for the last couple of seasons. And for me, that just, you know, I mean, exit velocity isn't the end all be all, but it's something that's obviously pretty important. Aaron Judge has been near the top of that list for years and years. And guess what? I mean, we're seeing the results ourselves in lifetime, but yeah, with Merrifield, I was just off of it. And we understand they bring other things to the table, right? That the guys near the bottom of that list usually give you something else. Like, I'm sure, I haven't looked up Bubba Thompson's exit velocity, but I'm sure it's I'm sure it's near the bottom. But man, I mean, everyone brings a different need to the table, and there's certain categories that we need to get throughout the year. And yeah, I don't even know where I'm going with it. Just speed is important. Everything's important. It's balance. Yeah,
and you have weaknesses. You know, you're always going to have a weakness on your team, and you just hope that you're able to fill it in some way, whether it's a guy who just comes out of nowhere and does super well, or otherwise. I mean, think about Spencer Strider. There were people who were interested in Strider for sure. Because of the preseason that he put together and how he pitched initially, but nobody thought we were going to get this, right? So those are the guys. Those are the guys that can make that huge difference. And oftentimes those are the guys, you know, even though Judge is really good, you still spent like a second or third round pick on him. And also, like, you need to make sure, like, you know, I don't know whether there's something to it or not, but like, if you are, I don't want this come across as negative, but like, you know, for some people, if you are somebody who targets a Judge early on in the draft, right, kind of not going after that speed or not going after that pitching, like, is there something to be said about the roster construction approach that you have and what might, you know, happen as a result of that, right? Where, even if you build a balanced team, I think there's just more adaptability and more opportunities to do better. But I don't know. I don't know if that's actually something or just me, you know, wanting to believe that because it's not the approach that I take.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, of what, you know, what it is that we do is we can bring here a panel of 15 of some of the best players, and everyone has their own unique approach. There's obviously a lot of crossover. There's certain players that we like or different strategies, but we all build differently and we rotate. You know, sometimes we have amazing years, usually not really any bad years, or at least, you know, we hope so. And then, just all depends year to year, but I'm wishing you luck here down the stretch. Hopefully you can pull off one of those mains, obviously second place in both. It's still a pretty nice payday. And then of course, taking down your super, going to knock on wood that holds, but it does look like a pretty solid lead for you. So good luck down there with the.
Yeah. Well, I got Jeff Zimmerman on my, and Fred Zinke on my tail in that super. They're in second place and I'm up a little bit right now, but it was much closer very recently. And I know that, those types of leads can evaporate pretty quickly, especially when I actually have a pretty thin pitching staff. I decided that was the one league I was like, I don't want Cease on every single one of my big teams. So I'm going to go with Lucas Giolito in round two instead.
Wow.
And that, my friends, was a poor choice.
And the difference, but hey, if you pull it off, you win this league, and especially it's actually extra sweet if you can beat a couple of guys like that, you can hold them off. Zimmerman and Zinke are two of the best, and you put those guys together, that's even more dangerous. So if you guys are able to hold them off, or you're able to hold them off, that'd be pretty amazing. Real quick on before we kind of talk a little bit about looking ahead at the 2023 ADP, and also without giving up, I guess, how much fab you have left or your interest or if you can even afford them, but what are your initial thoughts on the big three that are up now, and specifically talking about number three overall prospect, Corbin Carroll, who's off to a fantastic start with Arizona, left-handed bat. Gunnar Henderson for Baltimore has just shot up the boards, the prospect boards. Had an amazing debut, home run in his first game. And then Oswald Peraza for the Yankees. The Yankees have been stinking. They really need somebody. They already have, Oswaldo Cabrera. And now they have Oswald Peraza. And all three have essentially been 20 homer, 30 stolen base guys in the minors. A couple of those guys split between AA and AAA. Actually, Carroll and Henderson started the year in AA, came up into AAA and crushed it. Peraza is the one guy that's just short of the, he's got more stolen bases than the other two guys, but just 18 home runs. I think a little bit of a weaker batting average and slash line, but What are your initial thoughts? Are you going to go after any of them? And if so, do you have like an order of preference? Do you look at schedule, anything like that?
Yeah, I generally do my fab stuff like over the weekend. So I don't have like a clear sense. I mean, I think Carroll is super interesting because of the speed, you know, that comes along with the power. We already saw him hit a ball. I think he hit it 439 feet, but it didn't go out like in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Like it hit up like right below the yellow line, you know, so there's the power there. I think they're going to give him like a full run of games. They want to see what they have. You know, I would be surprised if he wasn't up with them to start the season next year. So Carroll's definitely interesting. I'm also like, you know, I'm also a big believer in not, especially for younger players, not putting a huge amount of your fab into that. I mean, think about all the young players that have come up. You know, there's so many reasons why they don't end up doing well. I mean, like the only one that stands out is Michael Harris, you know, who's a guy who came up, you know, there was people were spending $200 on fab for him. And it ended up working well, you know, but there's countless other guys, like even Vinny P, who was great. Like, I mean, I have Vinny P in a few places and I love him, but now he's injured, right? And so that's something that you have to factor into the equation too. Like these guys can get injured as well. And when you look at a lot of the projections, like they don't love these guys. Like even mm-hmm. with Carroll, I think his bad X projection is 227 with two home runs and three steals, you know, rest of the season, which again, like the ceiling though is much higher than that. And that's what you're hoping to do is just to kind of get lucky and to hit that ceiling. But like, you'd look at like a guy like Jake McCarthy, you know, of the, on the exact same team who I think leads the league in steals since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a guy who is readily available as well that we weren't really like, you know, paying attention to. And so, you know, for me, in a lot of instances, I'd prefer to dominate unless it's like a known thing, you know? And so I'd much rather hold on to my fab. Like in the super, I think I have 116 or like $120 or something like that left. So I've got like a decent amount. And so I think the question is just like, how aggressive are you on going after these guys? You know, what are going to be some of the decision points down the stretch that can have that big impact, you know, like, because like, you know, the difference between having a guy in a lineup for a week versus not having anybody there because of an injury or because of something else, you know, all of those things, I try to play it. And then on a team that needs pitching, you know, that's what kills me. I lost Dustin May 112 to 111 in that league.
Oh man.
Yeah. So like, that's who I really went after because what I need is pitching. You know, like the hitting is fine, you know, like I wouldn't mind getting more hitting, but I really need the pitching. And so, you know, looking at it, the league and being able to say like, ah, well, I can get like any two-star pitcher I want from here till the end of the season, you know, or I know that I'm going to be able to be aggressive on some pitchers. Maybe somebody has really good pitching or somebody has a really good closer and they're going to drop them because they don't need them in that league, or they have a really good hitter and they're going to do that. So I'd much rather like save up and not be hamstrung. So in most of my leagues, I have like, I think in one main, I have $70 left. I think in one, I have like 100 and something. And then
that's good.
Like
these days, around like 100. Rich.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm feeling all right about it, but it goes quick. You know, you get a little aggressive one week and it all kind of adds up. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, that, and it's also a turning point, right? Because you know that those three guys are going to go for a pretty penny. One of those guys could sneak by. For example, if Peraza comes up and really does nothing, maybe that's a guy that you can get for in the teens or whatever. So I'm sure maybe you'll throw some keep them honest bids on there. But it's really an inflection point in the rest of your season, because having that amount of money, you realize you pretty much, not necessarily all in, but you'd have to put in a significant amount for that. And then it hamstrings you potentially for the moves that, you know, you would want to possibly make and have that hammer, even a few dollars, right? Like in 2 weeks, having those extra few dollars makes a real key difference between getting someone or just having some, you know, bum in your starting lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no better feeling when you're going down the stretch, like you're in that last week and you can set your bids in a way where you know that your competition cannot get the guys that they're going to want, or the guys that you think are the best, right? There could be a valuation differential or something like that, but if you feel like, hey, I can put myself in the best situation possible in the last three, the last two, the last week, whatever it is, you know, that can be big, because in that like throughout the season, we have different levels of information about like how our teams are going to do and what we're really going to need. It could be that your team starts off slow for home runs, but really like you've got a home run hitting team. So you catch up over the longer haul. But with 2, 3, 4 weeks, 1 week left, you know precisely, you know, or as precisely as you will ever know, like what categories you need and what your plan is or what your strategy is to win. And so being able to execute that, I think, is something that's important. And so the question just becomes that sense of urgency we feel every fab period versus being able to have that like long-term focus. And I think in some places I've been better at that than others. And, you know, and so we'll see, like the question is, do I want to give that up because of Carroll or somebody like that? And it's super appealing. I mean, he's already like the fastest runner in baseball and, you know, like hit a ball 440 feet. So that sounds pretty good to me. And Henderson, like, looks good. They're both batting in decent positions. I mean, that's I think what a lot of what I like factor in, like where are they hitting in the lineup? You know, like what team, what's the upcoming schedule, those factors that aren't really about like what their talent level is, because what you're hoping to do is kind of catch lightning in a bottle, you know, for 4 weeks.
Of course. Cause if they're coming up and facing, you know, Rangers pitchers versus you know, the Mets pitchers, you're talking about two different outcomes, and I think we can all see it. There's definitely a predictability level in baseball in that realm. Hitters going up against DeGrom, Scherzer, Chris Bassett probably aren't going to be doing so well. So let's talk a little bit about the looking ahead to 2023 ADP. Wanted to just real quick mention for folks that do NFL and play DFS, definitely check out our package over at ftndaily.com. And actually got a promo code for you. It's NFL DFS. It'll get you $50 off, which is about 20% off our package. And it's loaded. We're really, you know, it's educational. We'll help you build winning lineups. We've got one of our main guys is a two gun who is a 3-time Millie Maker winner. So he's won the Millionaire Maker 3 times. By the way, he did it all with a Green Bay stack, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. So when they were like 5% roster that week, nobody was in on them. So a lot of great content, be entertained, have fun. So check us out, ftndaily.com. Mostly we're going to help you win some money. So 2023 ADP, it's kind of a big batch of guys that could potentially kind of sort of crack the first round. I guess my first question is, before we kind of talk about any of these players, if you had the number one pick, kind of just knowing what you know now, yeah, kind of throwing you on the spot here. And you have, here's the twist, but you had to take a hitter.
Oh, I had to take a hitter.
You don't like that question.
I haven't even thought about hitters, Vlad. What is a first round hitter? Well, can you please explain to me what a first round hitter is? Yeah, if I had to choose a first round hitter, gosh, I wish I had like a draft board in front of me. I can't even remember.
Well, we got the guys on that. I mean, on the outline. Let me throw out the names first. Yeah.
Okay. So, never mind. It's Trey Turner. Easy.
Okay.
Easy peasy.
Okay.
Easy peasy. Sorry. I was looking at the outline and I saw every name except for Trey Turner. I was like, who am I missing here? It would be Trey Turner for sure. I mean, he's just so consistent. He's across the board. He's generally been, quote, he's been knock on wood healthy. He's in the best team in baseball. Sorry, you know, I have to acknowledge the greatness of the Dodgers. You know,
are they better than the Cardinals? Cardinals are pretty damn scary right now. Mets are scary. Mets are beating us.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a good playoffs. I mean, the margins are relatively small, and the NL West is not that good this year. You know, like I think it's taken a little bit of a step back, but I still think the Dodgers so much depth. You know, they've got to be the.
I'm sorry. We have half the players of the top six. So three of the top six players hit 1, 2, 3 in the Dodgers lineup on the Razzball Player Rater. That is, that's freaking.
Is Mookie insane. That high out there?
He's fourth now. Goldie, Trey Turner, Betts, Ramirez, and then Freddie Freeman. Then Verlander's the first pitcher. Amazing, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers are good and it's a great lineup to be in. And I mean, they're stealing too. I mean, like Freeman, I can't remember how many steals he has. I don't have him on any teams.
Low teens, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge with the overall profile that he provides as well. So yeah, I would go with Trey. Trey would be my number one hitter that I'd go after. I do think like J-Ram is interesting. I don't know how many steals he has this year, but he's interesting just from like you know, I know it's too early to think about it, but like a positional perspective. And then I think Julio is also really interesting just because the steals, the steal combination with the power and the developmental curve is pretty nice. The one guy that I'm hesitant on is Acuna, just because like I was watching, whatever it was, MLB Network, and I think he was out for a couple days, and then he hit a home run, and they were like, "Oh, like, is your knee feeling better?" And he's like, "No, my knee is not going to feel better for the rest of the season. I'm just hoping I can get there." And it's just like, again, he's stolen a ton of bases. The power hasn't been there. He's still a great player, but it just feels like he's not necessarily the, you know, like I don't see a huge difference between him and Julio, right? Because Acuna batting average hasn't always been the carrying card. So, and hopefully the Mariners get a better lineup at some point. I was kind of hoping that Soto was going to go there, because having Soto and you know, J-Rod there for however long would have been beautiful.
So the funny thing on Trey Turner, I actually tweeted last week how I was a little disappointed with his stolen base is not bad, right? Like, we can really nitpick, but at the end of the day, if you are going to score, I mean, he's basically on pace for 115, 120 plus runs and 120 plus RBI. So he's at 82 runs, 86 RBI. He's got 18 homers, maybe get to 25. And when I tweeted this, concerned about how he hadn't stolen a base in, or basically like one base in the last like 3 weeks, he then stole two in the next three games, which was nice. But he's at 22 right now on the season. But either way, man, I mean, guy hitting over 300, just absolutely phenomenal in that lineup. You mentioned Freddie Freeman. He's at 11 stolen bases. It's the home runs that are down. His ISO basically is, he's got like a, he's not far from his career mark. So he's at 187 now. He's usually at 211. He had that crazy outlier season in the shortened campaign 2020 when his ISO was nearly 300. But that's obviously a whole different story. And then Jose Ramirez, he is on pace for similar home runs that we saw last season. He's at 26 now, maybe fall a little short. He's at 36 now last season. But the stolen bases, 27 last year, 14 just so 14, far this year. But what's amazing, I'm looking at his plate discipline. The guy is a freaking beast. His walks are down. He's under 10% for the first time basically in four seasons. But he's striking out at a 10% clip. And he's at 12% for his career. His play discipline is just phenomenal. He's just a like a nice, solid first round. And he's already got 106 or more RBIs than he had all the last season in 35 less games.
Yeah. I mean, there's some real talent. And even though the steals are down, I mean, the thing is, like, year to year, these, especially things like steals, home runs, they can fluctuate dramatically. But over the longer haul, it's going to work out. So I almost like going after guys that maybe they underperformed in some sort of category, but there isn't a clear reason. I mean, with Trey, he's getting a little bit older, but he's like 22 for 24, you know? So would I be surprised if next year, like, you know, let's say he steals 25 this year, 26 this year, that if he steals 35 next year, you know, instead of getting to that 30 number that we were hoping he would get to, you know? So I don't know. I think there's something to be said about kind of like even outside of just a single season sample, like looking at that broader long-term trend, you know, and maybe seeing some opportunity for regression, you know, coming. Like, I think like Judge, for instance, last year, I think he had, I might just be making this up, but I think he had one of his lowest home run per fly ball rates, you know, last year of any season. And I think it's just one of those things that sometimes I like to make things up just to like fit my narrative. So let me just double check. To see if that's the case, but let's see. Well, I mean, lower. It was 27.7 last year, and this year it's 34.7. You know, and career it's 32%. You know, so it was much lower than it had been previously. You know, it's now higher than it had been previously. If you average them out over the course of the two full seasons, you know, he's right around where he would usually be, which I guess is my broader point. Like. And I think it was Casey Cha when you interviewed him, or I can't remember if it was in the interview, but one of the things that he's famous for is kind of like going after like last year's bum, you know, like last year's guy who didn't perform. And like, you know, sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't, but even when it doesn't work out, you're generally getting them at a lower at that discount compared to the guys who did really well last year that you're jumping them up in ADP now. So I feel like it's kind of like a win-win in some situations. So I think that's the type of guy that I want to be going after next year, like heading into drafts, is looking for those guys that can rebound, as long as there isn't like some sort of concrete and clear explanation for why they did so much worse.
And Trey Turner also, it's interesting because I remember I was basically fine-tuning projections every day leading up to the season, and the little tweaks of like, oh, Trey Turner may not lead off anymore. Now he's going to hit second. So you adjust the runs, you know, plate appearances based on, you know, for the runs and then the RBI. And it's interesting. Sure, he's got only, for him, 22 stolen bases is low, but who the heck thought he was going to be hitting third in this lineup? How do you RBI, steal bases, man, when Betts or Freeman are always on first, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely true. And that's key because it moves him from that like 4+ category guy to like that clear 5 category contributor that just dominates. And the runs are such an underestimated category, especially again, like contextualizing it within the current league settings. Like, you know, 100 runs this year is going to be very, very different than it was in previous years, you know, like the run environment. Like I look at guy, like, I mean, I think Cabrian Hayes has like 32 RBI or something like that, you know, like pretty 49 low runs. And the dude's been playing all season. You know, you're just like, you're like, that's rough. Like that's,
And he was hurt a little bit. Cut him a little slack, bit, right?
We'll cut him a little bit of slack, but still, It's brutal.
And then with Aaron Judge just like annihilating the field, I mean, he's going to go, I think there'll be a lot of drafts where he goes number one this year. You also probably see a lot of conversation where, oh, he has to regress. He must regress. And sure, he might. And obviously the question mark says he's going to be a Yankee next year. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. Actually, I saw some picture. I think it was Razzball Gray himself. It was like a picture of Gunnar Henderson next to Aaron Judge with Aaron Judge wearing an Oriole hat, and it stuck. It kind of freaked me out at first, but then it just hit. I was like, that looks kind of nice. Imagine it. Yeah, I mean,
wouldn't that be something, right? Like Orioles, up and coming team, great development. I imagine they'll go for somebody in like 2 or 3 years, maybe. But I mean, the thing with Judge is like, you know, if you look at his barrel rate, his barrel rate this year is 25.4%, you know, career is 20.1%. And it never feels like guys are going to regress. You know, it's like, is he deserving this? Absolutely. But, you know, again, like over the longer term, I think it'll happen. So I'm sure Judge will go high next year. I probably won't be drafting him. I may be making a mistake, but I just feel like, yeah, it's tough.
And the question is always regress to what, right? Because they'll even a 25% reduction is still going to potentially give you a first round value. So you're talking about a guy that has 15 more home runs than anyone else in baseball, leads the league in runs, leads the league in RBIs, is hitting right around 300 and has thrown in 15 steals.
Yeah,
we still have a month to go. It's wild to look at these numbers.
Yeah. Bob and I joke around about the yoga narrative, 'cause I think it was like 3 years ago, he and Stanton started doing yoga, and it was like I didn't realize he had done yoga, and Bubba was like, oh, they've done yoga. And I was like, man, it's the yoga. That's what's keeping him healthy. They're not doing the weightlifting anymore. They're doing the flexibility, you know, it. Yeah.
That's because we're living in parallel universes there, because that's something we've talked about in the pod, because my text chain crew make fun of me because I brought this up as a selling point on Judge a couple of years ago. And that's Rob Silver, Modica, and Jenstad. And I wasn't even kidding. And they thought I was kidding. I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. This is for real. These guys are like, him and Stanton are big muscle building guys. Like, I like those type of things. Like, okay, so now he's going to get more into endurance and flexibility. Like, maybe he can stay longer in the lineup. He's not going to lose that much power. So it's a thing. I believe in these things.
I mean, it's true. And again, like, I think this goes back to the rigidity of my philosophy. Like, I say that, and then you look at, like, your point is very well taken. I mean, the 15 steals, like, even if he regresses back to 10, which is not surprising, like, it's not like he's never stolen before. I mean, with that power, and now that power, like power's like, it's not the new stolen bases, but it's kind of close, right? Like a lot of our valuation systems are totally off kilter because they place such an emphasis on steals. and not on home runs because of the run environment or the home run environment. And now it's different. And so now the valuation systems need to change too. And it'll be interesting to see, like, when we plug these players and their projections into the valuation systems, are these home run guys now going to be a lot higher than they would be otherwise, because it is actually a factor that differentiates them. And the projections have always loved Judge. Like, Steamer loved Judge this year. He was at least a top 20 guy, if not a top 15 guy. But
they love Stanton too, I remember.
Yeah. I don't even know how Stanton's doing this year. I know he's been injured for a little bit. So
maybe. Yeah, he just got back. He, you know, unfortunately, one of those guys has got to be injured every year. You can't expect him healthy for a whole season. But by the way, Julio Rodriguez, so this kid, he's 21 years old. You're going to see him go first in some drafts. I think it's just really obvious, but he's going to go 30-30 in his rookie season. He needs to get 9 home runs in the next 5 weeks to get there, 7 stolen bases, but still, anyways, flirting with 30-30 as a kid in your first year, like, that's just something magical. So kind of has that Acuna first overall feel to Tease feel, right? So he'll be up there, right? Do you think he'll be a consistent top 5 pick, or that might have something to do with how if DeGrom stays healthy, I think you'll see him go number one in a lot of picks. I know you'll be jumping on him one overall, right? I think I would too.
Yeah. I mean, Julio, I definitely think he is. He's there, you know, like he's definitely in that conversation. If it's not Turner for me, and maybe even like after diving in, you know, it would be J-Rod. I mean, you know, he's improved. Like, I'm just looking at his 40 game rolling average, you know, the contact rate is up, you know, the K rate's down. Walk rate's kind of low a little bit, but you don't really care about that much in 5x5. If anything, like, he's putting the ball in play more. And you mentioned it, the 30-30, you know, and really, like, you know, why would he get worse? You know, like, BABIP goes down, like, home run per fly ball is at 18.6. He's got 41 barrels, you know, 41 barrels and 21 home runs. I mean, honestly, like, he's been a little unlucky, you know, when it comes to like home runs per barrel. So there's nothing like that really jumps out at you at being outrageous. And then you got the development curve. And I mean, the guy's just he's an absolute phenom. So
I wonder if Juan Soto, by the way, if he's going to go for a discount, he should, right? A little bit, which just means back into the first round. So I understand so you don't call him a first round bust per se, because I think he's up there top 60, 50, 40 in the player rater, but crazy. He's hitting 248. He's got a 249 BABIP, which is about 100 points less basically than his career rate, yet an OBP over 400, like he gets every season. So that's going to be another interesting profile to look at. People just kind of standard, like, people that don't really dig into things, they'll look and they'll see, oh, he ends up 260. Oh, you know, I don't know if I can take him in there, but you know, most likely a guy like Juan Soto is going to bounce back and probably hit over 300 again. But that'll be an interesting case study for us, I think, this offseason.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like, I bet he bounces back pretty hard, pretty strong next year. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got, like you mentioned, the 249 BABIP. Doesn't really make sense. It doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe he's pulling ground balls into the shift or something like that, but it's not like that wouldn't have been happening before. So I'd look for a big bounce back for sure. You know,
any other players that stand out to you from the list? And I think also some other guys that maybe like where does Goldschmidt fit into things? Machado. I know these, you know, this is it's not your language. I know you're looking at your Burns and you're getting excited. And then I mentioned him first round Manny Machado and you're like, but any of these hitters that stick out to you that you think could be borderline first rounders, Austin Riley, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little tough. I mean, Machado is interesting. I'd have to dive into him a little bit more. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. honestly would be interesting to consider. Mm-hmm. You know, I do really like the second round pitchers. Like, I think Dylan Cease is an absolute stud, you know, whatever he's, I don't think he's, you know, I think he's incredible, but like, you know, even Bobby Witt, I mean, he's at 19 and 26. You know, like, so 19 home runs, 26 steals, 251 batting average isn't really hurting you, you know? And I think in a lot of ways, like, you know, you can make up batting average. I mean, you can actually make up batting average later on in drafts, you know, it's just that speed that is so challenging. So as long as you're getting a guy who steals, you know, Machado, like, the power like hasn't really been there that much this year, right? He hit like 10 home runs super early on, but he's not being like outrageous with his power potential. I guess he's 24-7.
He's just like a little period of time in where he was okay in the middle of summer before Juan Soto came and kind of, I think, reinvigorated him.
Yeah. And he's a pretty consistent, like on and off guy years. I'm just kidding. But like he normally has like a really good year and then a down year and then a really good year and then a down year and then like a really good year. But the thing about Machado is he's so consistent. He's so good. He's just doing it. You know, he has a 345 BABIP this year, so he's not going to hit 306 again. So I think it depends. But I think that there's a lot of like young guys that are going to be really interesting. You know, I mean, even Adley Rutschman, like, he's incredible. So, like, I mean, yeah, he's not going to go in the second round, but he's pretty phenomenal. I mean, what he's doing and how good the plate discipline is and everything he's doing, he's stealing some bases as well. Like, there's a lot of guys like that that I'm really going to need to dive into and take a look at them because there's a lot of talent there.
How ironic that you happen to just bring up a catcher out of the blue.
I know. Who would have thought it? That's actually like one of the things I'm thinking about. There's so many good catchers, you know. It's like Varsho's going to have catcher eligibility again. You're going to have JTR. Sal's coming off of a bad year, so obviously he drops back, but he's been smashing since he came back. You know, you have Rutschman, you have Will Smith, who's just, you know, again, like, just been an incredible player.
Shea Langelier season, baby.
Oh yeah. I mean, I doubt it. I did not pick him up in Fab when I should have. I went with Nick Fortes, JTR Light, you know?
Yeah. Hey, steals bases, does it all.
Yeah. Does a little bit of everything. It's going to be interesting, though, for sure. I do feel like this year has seen some pretty, because of the run environment, has seen some pretty dramatic shifts in guys' profiles. And so the question is going to be like, how much do we believe was the ball? How much do we believe that that run environment is going to be consistent? I mean, I certainly think it is. But at the same time, like, I also think that people are learning that, like, hey, the product isn't actually that much better. Like, you know, like when people are not hitting home runs. I mean, it's actually been weird. Like the last few days, I feel like home runs have really gone up. I've seen a lot of opposite field home runs. So I don't know if something sneaky is going on there or not. But like, really seems like the offensive environment the last 3-4 days has been changed dramatically.
It's really annoying how that is, right? And then like, oh, all of a sudden it'll be like, oh, football's starting up again, we need to have more home runs, let's change the ball. Man, this is so lame.
Yeah, we're gonna I'm gonna do like a little investigation here to see you know, what over the last like little last few days, like what time are we even in right now? All right, let's say like since like Sunday. All right. What has been the home run per fly ball rate?
Oh, I like this type of digging on the spot. We're getting the info on the spot.
13%. It's been 13% over the course of the full season, which is not a good measure of it because it's going to be lower.
Let's see what the difference.
Yeah, it's going to be lower than that. 11.3. So I guess it's actually really not like that big of a difference, because you'd want to compare it to like what was the 4 days before then. Nothing people enjoy more like listening to a podcast than like, you know, just me.
Stats
like
on the spot. Hey, you know what? This crowd does.
Okay, good. I love
They're waiting for these numbers.
And then so.
In the meanwhile, while you look that up, I'm going to ask you a question to answer after. I want to ask you about the sort of, they're not first round busts, but they're just guys that are kind of forgotten about, right? Because their seasons have been sort of average, even though they've been good, if that's a weird way to put it. But talking about specifically Kyle Tucker and then the two Blue Jays, Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette, kind of the biggest disappointment of all, but these guys were like locked in first rounders. Guerrero was more of the, okay, we expect him, you know, probably to regress, and he doesn't steal bases, so that took a lot of people out on him altogether. He's hitting 260, where he had hit basically 300 prior, or something. No, he's actually hitting better than that. I'm sorry, it's Bichette I was looking at, who's hitting 260. But yeah, this is an interesting group. And then Kyle Tucker's actually been really good. Are these guys just going to kind of fall under the radar and be like second, third round gems?
I don't know. I mean, maybe Vlad Jr. actually isn't good. Maybe that's just the answer.
Oh yeah,
that's to the equation is just that he's bad. I wear my Blue Jays hat for you.
Nice. Yes, you did.
Yeah, man. Holy cow. Yeah, it's certainly interesting. You know, again, like the ground ball rate regressed, you know, this year for Vladito. You know, it was just such a huge drop. Those normally don't stick. You know, that 10% drop in ground ball rate. You know, yeah, he's probably more like that, you know, 49% guy. That makes a lot of sense to me. And then that home run per fly ball rate drops a little bit as well. So those are just the things. You know, Tucker has always been a guy that I really liked. I didn't like him like where he was going this year necessarily. I didn't dislike him either, but what is he? He's 22-19 with 260.
Yep.
But with a 269 BABIP too, you know, it's like.
And kind of
that's unlucky. I'd love to get him. Like if he falls into the third round or something like that, I'd be all over that. Even back into the second, I'd be all over that. And then if he moves up in the lineup a little bit, maybe.
That's kind of the problem. He's been getting screwed with the lineup spot, those weird Dusty Baker lineups. You have Jeremy Pena, like is in the prime of his, he's just feeling it. And he has to hit ninth. It you know, it's just some weird lineups there.
For sure. Yeah. You know, I looked it up. So the 4 days before Monday, the home run per fly ball rate was 11.5%. Mm-hmm. In the last four, it's been 13%. So
you
I don't want to start any conspiracy theories, but I mean, it's probably just small sample size noise, but whatever.
You know why?
I'll throw those conspiracy theories out there left and right.
No problem. You know why I know it's conspiracy theories? Because Elvis Andrews is hitting home runs from the leadoff spot. So I think you are correct in that you're onto something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and like AJ Pollock's hitting like opposite field jacks. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't believe for this sure. stuff. This is not true.
Man, thank you so much for coming on. I wanted to see anything that you have going on or anything you want to plug or last minute thoughts here.
No, just really appreciate you bringing me on. Folks are interested in on Twitter. I'm at BatFlipCrazy. I do a podcast normally weekly throughout the year, even during the off season with Bubba from Bench with Bubba, where we review fab. We'll do position reviews and previews, which is essentially going back and looking at, you know, how guys did last year, who were like the top 10, who were some surprises, digging into them and then looking forward in the preview. So if you're interested in, you know, following that, you can find that, that podcast is the Bat Flip Crazy Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So feel free to listen, but just really appreciate you inviting me on, Vlad. It's great to talk baseball with you. I look forward to seeing you. I'm not going to be able to be at First Pitch Arizona this year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I've got a work conference at the exact same time, so I can't do it. But I'll be there in Vegas in March. So I look forward to seeing you there. And best of luck finishing off your seasons. I hope it ends up well for you.
Thank you very much, my man. And the same here for you. And definitely do recommend people check out the Bat Flip Crazy podcast. Toby is one of the people I respect most in this industry and always love talking to him and checking out his draft boards too. So I'm always like, you know, what am I missing out on here that I'm not thinking about? So
nothing much, Vlad.
lots of yellow.
Lots of yellow.
So yeah, make sure you follow him at Bat Flip Crazy on Twitter. So thank you once again for our special guest, Toby. I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.